We now begin the third parak of Maseches Erevin, 3:1, and we're going to discuss the Eruv. This is the Eruv Tchumen we're talking about. Now, this gets confusing because there are three different kinds of Eruvin, three things called Eruv, that have nothing to do one with the other. One thing is the Eruv Tavshilin, nothing to do with our Maseches at all. That's a mechanism which allows you to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos, the egg, the bread, etc. That's Erev Tavshilin. Then you have the Erev Chatzeros. We just finished discussing that in the second parak. That's what a mechanism that allows different Rishuyos HaYachid to be combined. That's the Erev Chatzeros. And here we're talking about the Erev Tchumen. That allows one to adjust his, what's considered his Makum Shvisa, his home, for Shabbos, as I'll explain. So those two things have nothing to do with each other. Here we're talking about Tchumen and the Erev Tchumen. The Tchum is the 2,000 Amma, loosely speaking, radius around which, within which one must stay during Shabbos. The truth is we'll come back to the measurements, which is a little more complicated in the geometry later on, but let's keep it very simple now and just consider a person who's living out in the sticks. He has a farmhouse, and he's limited to his farmhouse and 2,000 almost, loosely speaking, in every direction on Shabbos. He can't go beyond the 2,000 almost. However, let's say, for example, he had a friend living in the next farmhouse over, which is 3,000 almost away, and that friend's making a bris on Shabbos, let's say, and he wants to go on Shabbos to his friend's house. Well, he won't be able to because the friend's house is more than 2,000 almost away. That'd be beyond the tchum, beyond the border. He, however, can set up an Erev Tchumen, which will allow a mechanism that will allow the tchum of his home and the tchum of his friend's home, since they will overlap. There's only, each one has 2,000 amas towards the other, and since they're only 3,000 amas away, they would overlap. There's a way to set it up that he could actually travel to his friend's house on Shabbos. And the way he does that is to establish that his home for Shabbos is not his normal house, but some other place. A place, let's say, which is, let's say, 1,500 amos from his house and 1,500 amos from his friend's house in the middle. And that being the case, if that were his home for Shabbos, he'd be able to get home and spend his time at home on Shabbos, since it's within the tchum of that new home. And it's also in the tchum of the friend's house, so he can go there on Shabbos as well. So if one wants to set up his makom shvis, his conceptual home for Shabbos, in a place other than his home, he has two options. One option is to simply camp out over there during Ben Hashmashas, as Friday turns into Shabbos. If he's out there in that spot, that can become his home for Shabbos. The other alternative is to set up a symbolic home by putting food over there. So he puts out his little picnic basket of food, and that picnic basket will be, since kind of your home is where the food is, so as long as he's got food out there for two meals, then that picnic basket could be considered to be the center of his Makom Shvisa, the center of his 2,000 Almas. And then again, he's got his home and his friend's home both inside the Tchum. So that's the idea over here. We're setting up an Erev Tchumen, a way to combine those two zones, his zone of 2,000 Almas and his friend's zone of 2,000 Almas, by setting up food stuff somewhere in the middle. So we'll have a number of Mishnayos that explain the rules of Erev Tchumen, but here we're focused on simply the question of which foods may be used for your Erev Tchumen. So the Mishnah says, B'kol ma'arvin, you could use any food you want to set up that Eruv. This is being a little loosely, but we'll have the exceptions going to be, and the focal point of much of the Mishnah is the exceptional status of water and salt. Water and salt are not considered to be sources of sustenance, mazon, for a person, and therefore they are ineligible to be used as the foodstuff that would be the Erev Tchumen. We're also going to talk about shitufe muvaos right over here for a moment. So the shituf is really the essentially functioning the exact same thing as the Erev Chatzeros. Erev Chatzeros, remember, was the food which unites the different residents of the Chatzer, of the courtyard, you know, in the apartment, let's say. They have one common food, which makes them into a consortium that they can all share the common space together. The Shetufim Mavos works the same way, essentially, except instead of uniting the members of the Chatzer, it's uniting the members of the Mavui, of the alleyway. The only difference, really, primarily between the Shituf and Mavaos and the Erev Chatzeros is that Erev Chatzeros must be done with bread, whereas the Shituf and Mavaos can be done essentially with any food, as we'll see right now in the Mishnah. So that's what the Mishnah says. Bakol Ma'arvin, you can use any food you want to make an Erev Tchumin, Mishtatfin, and your Shituf and Mavaos, Chutz Min Hamayim, Min Hamelech, the exceptions being water and salt. Again, those don't satisfy, those don't nourish a person, they're not considered to be like sustaining foods, and therefore they're not going to be acceptable for those purposes. There's a general klal, by the way, I should just say, sort of as a side point, but a very important point, that whenever the Mishnah says a klal, one cannot extrapolate fully from that klal, that principle. Even if it says something like, there's a principle, chutz, with one particular exception, that does not mean there aren't other exceptions, and in fact, there are other exceptions. There are other kinds of foods that one may not use for his Erev Tchumen or Shituvim Mavaos, like, for example, mushrooms. There are other examples also, actually beyond the scope of what I want to get to right now. The main point of our Mishnah here is that bread and salt, water and salt are ineligible, whereas essentially all other foods, with some exceptions, some small exceptions, are, yes, acceptable. Now, since we're talking about water and salt being exceptional, we're also going to say hakol nikach bekesef maaser. All types of foods essentially can be purchased with your maaser sheni money. There's no word sheni in the Mishnah, but it means the maaser sheni money. I'll remind you very briefly. Maaser sheni is that second tithe. It's the foodstuffs you bring in years 1, 2, 4, and 5, the Shemitah cycle, up to Yerushalayim to eat in Yerushalayim. And if you don't want to, or you're not able to bring the physical food itself because it's too much, too heavy, too far, whatever, you're allowed to redeem the Kedushas Maaser Sheni of that foodstuff onto coins, take the coins Yerushalayim, and then take those coins and purchase foodstuffs in Yerushalayim. So the main thrust of our Mishnah here is that yes, you can buy foodstuffs, whatever you want, in Yerushalayim, but as with your Maaser Sheni money, but you can't purchase water or salt with your Maaser Sheni money. Again, it sounds like this is the exception, but the truth is there are other exceptions as well. The Mishnah is over there in Maaser Sheni, Darshanat Klal Pratu Klal from the Pasuk. Yeah, in parts, it's technical, doesn't matter right now, but it comes out that things have to be pre-mi-pre. That means to say that there are things that come from other foods that come from other foods, like, you know, normal things that have babies or that have seeds, etc. And second of all, they have to be gedulei karka, they have to be foodstuffs that grow from or get their nourishment or the ultimate energy source from the ground. So that means vegetables as well as animals and so on are all acceptable. Since water doesn't make babies and salt doesn't make babies, nor do they get their nourishment from the ground or derive their energy source from the ground in the case of water, so then they're just not eligible. There are other exceptions as well, like, for example, fish. Fish don't get their energy from the ground, they live in the sea, and therefore you couldn't buy fish with your kesef maaser sheni. Okay, the Mishnah continues to say another way in which salt and water are exceptional is when it comes to a neder. If a person takes a neder and he swears off mazon, food from himself, so then he's allowed to eat water and salt. The Mishnah says, Hanoder min hamazon, one who takes a neder against sustaining foods, let's call it, Mutter b'mayim of melach, he is allowed to still drink water and eat salt. Nedarim are tricky and sort of complicated beyond the scope of what I want to deal with right here. The reason why nedarim are always very difficult is because the point of a neder is you say something, X, is forbidden to you as a korban is forbidden to you. But to understand what is included in that something, that X, it's all about the connotations of the word, and that requires us to be sensitive to the nuances of the Mishnaic Hebrew language, since that's what it's all built upon. That's happening here as well. So the Gemara ends up saying that if a person proscribes, he makes a neder against things that are zan, things that are nourishing, that would then forbid him from eating anything other than salt and water. If you actually use the word mazon, like they have in the Mishnah here, the truth is mazon would come like birkat mazon, essentially would only come to prohibit him from eating things that are made out of the five grains that were available to the and the main source of staple food in the time of the Mishnah. That's wheat, barley, oats, spelt, and rye. But other foods actually be okay. Anyways, all that again beyond the scope really of our Mishnah here. The point of the Mishnah here is that salt and water are exceptional when it comes to the Nedarim as well. And if one makes neder against mazon or things that are zan, the water and the salt would not be included. Okay, now, new point, like new paragraph from the Mishnah. The point of the Erev Tchumen is to set up like food for yourself on Shabbos. We'll discuss in the 8th parak how much food again. But the question is, does it have to be food that you not just are going to eat, but even that you could eat? In other words, what if the food is totally forbidden to you and you could never eat it, so it can't be food for you on Shabbos? Is it eligible to be used as an Erev Tchumen? So the Mishnah says, the Mishnah's answer, according to Tana Kama, is yes. As long as it's food for somebody, it's fine to be used as an Erev Tchumen. And that being the case, the Mishnah says, Ma'arvin le-nazir b'yayin. A nazir is someone who swore off drinking, getting benefit really from or consuming any grape product, including wine. So the nazir can't drink wine. Yet we're saying the nazir could use wine as his Erev Tchumen. Because while it's not food for him, it's food for other people. And similarly, Uli Yisrael b'truma. A non-Kohen could use truma food as his Erev Tchumen. Even though, of course, a Yisrael, a non-Kohen, can never eat the truma. That's forbidden to him on a penalty of Misa B'dei Shemayim, premature death. Still, he could use it as, according to the Tana Kama, he could use it as his Erev Tchumen because it's edible for somebody. It's food for somebody. That's the halach. However, Sumcha disagrees, and Sumcha says, Sumcha's Omer b'chulin. He says, no, only chulin, non-truma food, may be used by a non-Kohen for his Erev Tchumen, because it needs to be food that you could eat. Sumchas doesn't take issue with the Nazir using wine, but really for a sort of a technical reason, because he holds that ultimately a Nazir could do like Hataras Nadarm on his Nazirus, and he could essentially go to a Chacham and undo the Isser he has on consuming wine, and therefore sort of, even though he didn't, it's as if he, since he could, it would be eligible for that reason. So it's a side point. But the main point is Sumcha says it has to be food you could eat. Halacha, however, is like the Tana Kama, that it does need to be food you could eat. Nevertheless, I should just say that it's not going to work Bezman Hazeh for you to use Truma as your Erev Tchumen. The reason why is because nowadays nobody can eat Truma. Even Kohanim are all assumed to be Tameh, as Tameh Mace, and therefore they can't eat Truma either. And since no one could eat the Truma, nowadays the Lach would be that you cannot use Truma for Erev Tchumen. Okay, now, next part of the Mishnah. There's a basic principle, which is that a person needs to be in the same zone, let's call it. He has to be able to access his Erev Tchumen. If it's either there's some sort of physical separation which makes it impossible for him to access his Erev Tchumen, his food, or even if there's a halachic impediment that stops him from getting access to it, so then it will not be a valid Erev Tchumen. So our Mishnah here is considering possible halachic impediments and whether or not that's a problem. So here the Mishnah is going to say, according to the Tana Kama, we'll say that v'lekohen b'beisa pras, that a Kohen could set up his Erev Tchumen in a Beis HaPras. What's a Beis HaPras? So a Beis HaPras is a... There are actually three types of Batei Pras, the three types that it could be. But the point of our Mishnah here is the type where a grave was in a field, and then the field was plowed over. And there's a concern that small bone fragments were dragged around by the plowshare when it went over the grave. Now, a Kohen is not allowed to become Tamei from Tamei Mace, from a dead corpse, and bones can convey Tumah. Now, a Kohen can never go into a cemetery proper because just simply walking over a cemetery, or over, I should say, over a corpse, he's Ma'ahil on it, and he becomes Tamei. And you can't even walk Midor Rabbanan within Dal Ramos of where people are buried because we're afraid they might misjudge and end up being Ma'ahil and going over the corpse, which would be an Isser Doraisa of becoming Tamei or exposing yourself to Tumah as a Kohen from a corpse. the Beis HaPras were not afraid of the Kohen being exposed to Tumah via Ohel, of walking over a grave, because we're not worried about the grave, we're worried about bone fragments. And bone fragments, even large bone fragments, like whole bones even, can't convey Tumah through the mechanism called Ohel, meaning if one stands directly over the bone of a corpse, by itself, he will not become tummy. Only way bones can convey Tumah by Ohel is if there's a significant number of bones, which is this, what defines significant. There are a number of different ways in Maseches Ohelos, but bone fragments, certainly not. When it comes to bone fragments, the only way a bone fragment can convey Tumah is either by direct contact, maga, or by bearing its weight, slash moving it, masa. Now, Midurabanan, a Kohen is not allowed to go into a Beis HaPras, meaning within 100 amos around where the grave used to be, because we're afraid there could be small bone fragments and he might accidentally touch one or knock one, which would be maka. If he touches it, that would be maga. If he knocks one around and kicks it away or something, that would be masa, and that would make him tame midoraisa. However, for the sake of a mitzvah, a Kohen is allowed to go into a Beis HaPras. The reason why is because he could be very careful, and he can do what's called menapech v'holech. He could blow as he goes, meaning he could blow with his mouth and blow away anything on the ground. And then if they're both small fragments, they would be blown away. If they're larger fragments, they wouldn't be blown away. He would see them with his eyes. There's a bone there. And therefore, will be lenient for the sake of a mitzvah. So the point here of our Mishnah is, since a Kohen, in theory, could enter into the Beis HaPras carefully, being menapech v'holech, blowing as he walks, he could, in theory, have access to his Erev Tchumen, and therefore it's going to be okay, it's going to be effective. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, afilo Beis HaKfaros. Rabbi Yehuda says, not only can the Kohen put his Erev Tchumen into a Beis HaPras, but into a Beis HaKfaros proper. So, meaning the Tanakama and the Halacha is no, a Beis HaKfaros won't work. Simply won't work because a Kohen can't get in there. Therefore, he has halachic impediments where he can't access his Erev Tchumen. But Rabbi Huda says, yes, he could. Why does Rabbi Huda allow him to put it into a cemetery proper? Because Rabbi Huda holds there's a way in which he could still get access, which is, b'bnei shiachol leilech lachotz v'leachol. He could go in there and he could set up a contraption which would act as a machitza, the word lachotz, like the word machitza. He could creates a barrier between a tumah barrier between him and the graveyard, and therefore he could get access and le'achol and eat the. He could get in there and even on Friday afternoon or Shabbos, whatever, get access to and eat his Erev Tchumen. How would that work? Essentially, if you have a very large kli that can contain more than 40 saw, the Shida Teva Migdal, so you put that thing on like an agal on wheels essentially, and you can wheel it into the basic kfaros, the cemetery, and the Kohen on the inside is shielded effectively from the Tuma below. And that being the case, Rabbi Yehuda says, since he could access it through that artifice, so then it's going to be okay. Tanakama, Rabbi Yehuda says, no, that won't work. This begins to get rather technical. He holds that a mobile Shita Teva Migdal on this agala, on the wagon, because it's moving, it doesn't act as a shield against Tumah, so it won't work. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and says, no, a Kohen can't use the Beis HaKfaros, the cemetery, for his Makom Shvisa, his Erev Tchumen. The truth is, the Gemara goes on to say they have a second machlokas, which is even more technical. It has to do with whether or not one can get hana from a Beis HaKfaros. The rule is, in general, one may not get hana from a Beis HaKfaros, meaning one cannot get benefit from a corpse or the ground that serves a corpse, or really anything that serves a corpse. It's usur bahanat for beginning to get benefit from it, and therefore the cemetery should be off limits for this purpose. Rabbi Yehuda says it's still going to be fine. And the reason why is because he says that, listen, the for the sake of a mitzvah, Erev Tchumen, you're not really getting benefit. The general principle is mitzvahs lav lehenos netnu, mitzvahs weren't given for the sake of getting benefit, and therefore he's not getting like a hana in the conventional sense by using it as Erev Tchumen. The Tanakama Rebbe Nasi says that may be true, but then once Shabbos has started, the Erev kicked in, and now he's getting benefit because he's no longer a mitzvah. And Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with that, and he says that's not considered. The person doesn't care anymore about his food once he's got his Erev Tchumen, so he's not getting benefit from it. So that's a rather technical machlokas here. And the reason why we have to bring both of those issues in is because the first issue regarding the Kohen, if he can set up this magic Tumah shield, is relevant because it only has a nafkamina of whether a Kohen can use a cemetery or not for his Erev Tchumen, whereas the second machlokas that is through getting benefit in general from a basic forest would apply even to a non-Kohen. Halacha is going to be like the Tanakama, so cemeteries are off limits. There's some machlokas in the Rishonim, but anyways, let's just, so I'll leave the halacha lemaisa off now.